Welcome to MLB Daily, your one-stop shop for daily baseball content. I am LJ LaFiera. Alongside me, I've got Brandon Karam, and we are a Belly Up Sports podcast. We are what they aren't. Brandon, how you doing?
LJ, doing great. Leave from Syracuse in exactly a week from today. I will be gone Tuesday, May 9th. We'll be back. It will be nice to get back home. Expect a lot more content coming from LJ and I. Some in-person content will for sure be in the works. I'm very excited.
Wait a minute, I have to see you in person if I come home?
Sadly. Damn. I can't stare at you over a Zoom screen anymore. It's kind of sad, but yes, hopefully we can get a few in-person pods done. That would certainly be a great dynamic. Not that we don't have one, but it would be great for us to be able to really sit down together and do it, because it'd be a lot of fun. And I don't think we've even the only episode we ever did together was like the very, very first one, right?
First two, yes.
First two, that's right. First two. So yeah, very excited to get back home. Just got to grind out these finals here. But you're not here to listen to us talk about that just yet. You know, Monday's games were sort of categorized as great pitching from really around the league. And we have quite a few performances that we'd like to touch on. I think we're going to start with what was easily the best performance of the day. Dylan Cease of the White Sox. Dude's finally taking this big step up that a lot of us expected. When we talked with the bat flip guys last week, they were kind of penciling it. We're not penciling him in, but we're certainly considering him as an option for AL Cy Young, and he certainly made them look good yesterday against the Angels. As LJ, he goes 7 innings, allowing just one hit, striking out 11 batters, and that includes the 3 times that he faced Mike Trout. He got him to strike out all 3 times. Trout ends up 0 for 4 with 4 Ks. Just shows that even the greatest players do have tough games. But, I mean, a Dylan Cease, what an incredible start.
Yeah, talk about incredible starts. I mean, this plays right into the hands of our favorite go-to talking point of great starts. You know, when you talk about Cy Young, this is number one for him, I believe. Either way, you know, you're coming into May, you've got a 241 or a 248 ERA right now. You're well in the thick of things for this league. You're well in the thick of things across the league as being a great pitcher. It's all about just having performances like this. If you can get one of these a month and not make major mistakes, all of a sudden you're going to be in that Cy Young conversation every year.
Yeah.
You know, I make it sound like that's easy, but like, you know, if you're a Max Scherzer, that's nothing.
Absolutely. And when you look at some of these other stats surrounding a Dylan Cease this year, you go on to his Baseball Savant page, LJ, lots of red, pretty much red in every stat category you can think of here. We're talking the top 10th percentile in average exit velocity, expected ERA, expected batting average, barrel percentage, fastball spin rate, just really been having a good season, and he's 5 starts in. LJ, his worst start was against the Guardians about 2 weeks into the season. He went 5 1/3, allowing 4 runs. That was his worst start of the year. Since then, or the other starts, he was 5 innings with 1 earned, 5 2/3 with 1 earned, 6 innings with 2 earned, and then, of course, last night, 7 innings with 1 earned. We're talking about a whip that is now down to .93, and really filling in nicely for, you know, the pitchers that have been absent from this White Sox rotation that was so good last year. Of course, they have a Lucas Giolito back, and he's been pretty good in the 3 starts he's had. Not really much to complain about there, but outside of him, the White Sox have really struggled trying to find that other starter. Of course, you have a guy like a Michael Kopech, who LJ is very big on, and in the 4 starts he's made, he's looked good. But last year, when we were talking about Giolito and Lance Lynn and Rodon, and then you throw Cease in there, it was scary. And to see Cease take this next jump up, I mean, he's only 26 years old. looking like a stud, and let's hope that he can try kind of carry this throughout the next few weeks, because when we start talking about AL Cy Young in a few weeks, once we hit, what do we usually say? Memorial Day is when we start kind of really considering awards. Is that kind of our benchmark or
Memorial
what?
Day is when we start to say that everything that has happened before Memorial Day at Memorial Day is valid. Like that sample size is valid. So yes, about around then is when we can really start talking about a guy being a serious contender.
And should he keep up play similar to this, I see no problem in him being in heavy contention for this award. But to just really dominate this Angels lineup that is obviously so good, so loaded this year, super impressive with what I saw, and not really much to say. They end up going Cease to Kendall Graveman, who's been having a great year for them. And then Liam Hendricks strikes out the side to end it off. I was listening to the last inning on the radio in my car, and just a overall great showing from the White Sox. And what I think they could really turn it around here over these next few weeks. I'm not counting them out yet. They travel to Chicago, back to Chicago to face the Cubs at Wrigley this week. So
With
interested
that
to.
being said, though, I think we need to, if we're looking at a place to focus efforts here, Dylan Cease, Tony La Russa, you got to get him, both of you, get him into the sixth every single time. Get him through the sixth every single time. Now, the numbers are backing it up. He's got good stuff right now. He's the hot arm in this rotation. Use him like that because right now, from what I've seen, Brendan, this bullpen is half as good as it was last year.
Oh
And
yeah.
they need the starters. What starters are doing well? The Kopechs, the Ceases, the Giolitos. Those guys need to be in here picking up a lot of that slack every single time they come out right now.
And speaking on that White Sox bullpen last year, when they were when they had it was like Aaron Bummer to Tapera to Hendricks, it was scary. And of course, we don't need to bring Craig Kimbrel up in that same talking point, because his performance with the White Sox was there was a lot left to be desired there, but still super impressive. And I can, I still think that the White Sox can be a legit team. They're only 22 games in, still super early. Fangraphs still gives them about a 37% chance to win the AL Central. I would think it's a little bit higher than that, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, again, it all depends because if maybe this Twins rotation, maybe this Twins pitching is actually quite a bit better than we thought it was. Either way, I think, this is still the White Sox year. This is more of a sign of problems to come than anything else in my eyes.
Absolutely. Well, let's get into some of the other great starts that we saw yesterday, with one of my guys who I have been talking about quite a bit lately, and with good reason. And that's Zach Gallen. Finally gets his first decision of the year for the Diamondbacks. He goes 6 1/3 against the Marlins yesterday, allowing 5 hits, 2 earned, and striking out 5 batters. Brings the season ERA down to 1.27. And LJ, like you were saying, they've got some guys in this Diamondbacks pitching rotation. They've got, or yeah, in their starting rotation, they've got Mad Bum, Merrill Kelly, and Zach Gallen. Three very above average starters, I think, is very fair to say.
Very fair to say, especially when you consider Mad Bum, 32 years old. Are we talking about that same 30s rebound with him, perhaps, as he kind of figured his way through into being a great pitcher again? Like, that's a very valid question. The other guys, they haven't been around as long. You're talking about 2 and 3 years of service time between the two, expect or 5 years total of service time between the two, respectively. So this very well, we're talking about potential breakout starters in Merrill Kelly and Zach Gallen. I know We got a little bit more time to go. We still got to get to Memorial Day, but we very well could be talking about those two in a very different light this time next year. And if Mad Bum has kind of had a resurgence all of a sudden, then we're talking about this team being in a much better position than we ever thought they were.
For the long run, I really think that this Diamondbacks team has done its fans wonders really since last year. Of course, they were the worst team in the league last year. I think there's not a lot of questions that you could say Baltimore, but I think Arizona kind of took the cake there. And to start this season, LJ, how about third in team ERA, fifth in team WHIP when it comes to their starting pitchers? They've allowed the fewest home runs from their starting pitchers, the fourth fewest hits per nine from their starters. Super impressive.
You know, in a ballpark where it's not that easy to do that. I mean, you think about this is a team that did have to put a humidor in only a handful of years ago.
Yes, and now, of course, every ballpark has a humidor, which has led to the demise of entertaining games. I only joke. But yeah, I mean, you look at the prospects that the Diamondbacks have too. They have two top 25 guys that are projected to be in the majors very soon. Alec Thomas, who's the number 24th ranked overall prospect, that a lot of people expect that he will be up at some point this season. And then their big guy, Corbin Carroll, who is the 14th ranked prospect according to Fangraphs. He's an outfield prospect. He kind of had a rough year in the minors last year. I think he ended up getting hurt and missed a big chunk of that season. But a lot of people expect that he'll be up maybe end of the season this year, early next year. But they're certainly doing themselves a lot of good with these guys. Let's not forget about Jordan Lawler, Drew Jameson, those two guys.
I was about to bring him up because he's been quite the interesting case. I mean, I think next time these groups go and re-scout, they're going to like Jordan Lawler a lot more. I mean, you look at what he's done this year. He's with Arizona's A team right now. He's got a 171 weighted runs created plus. Yes, he's striking out a lot right now, but that's something that can come down with time. He has way overperformed his grades offensively to start his career. He's a lot more developed on that end of the game than people already thought. And overall, I think the fielding and the physical potential speaks for itself with him. So yeah, he's definitely not somebody to be underrated. I think he's low on the list right now at 84.
Oh, absolutely. Especially when you consider, I mean, this was their first round pick in 2021. They took him sixth overall, clearly put a lot of, draft capital into picking him. And I don't know if anyone else is a fan of the game out of the park baseball, but I've had a few saves where in the future I've ended up getting Jordan Lawler, and he's turned into quite the solid shortstop for me. So just a guy to kind of keep your eye out for with the Diamondbacks here. It's still going to be a few years before he is able to get to the bigs, but a guy that could certainly be shooting up prospect lists potentially when they redo it. I think always around like the All-Star break is when they try to reassess, when they have like the futures game and stuff like that.
It also because the draft's coming right up then too now. Even more so. So that's the point where the guys are able to be traded. Everyone hops on in on figuring out who's actually good and who's not. I think they do a good job with that part. If only they, marketed themselves better, marketed that aspect better. Honestly, what better time to market your young stars than right before the trade deadline? That's not to say that every single one of them is going to get traded, but if you hyped up, you got ESPN to hype up your top prospect list and stuff and do like feature reels on these guys and like different content packages based on the guys in the top 100 and do it over a couple nights stretch, people will go for that. People know the names and people might get a little more excited, like, hey, this guy might move somewhere, this guy might not. It depends on if his team decides to make some crazy move to make the playoffs. Here's what they're doing right now. Like, there's so much opportunity there for them.
You're asking ESPN to cover something other than football or basketball.
I'm asking somebody to cover this, not ESPN necessarily. I've given up on them, especially like we just had this whole argument and not argument, but just frustration fest on the radio show the other day about just the fact that, you know, ESPN, they try to do everything but listen to the fans. Like, the fans literally go there just because they want sports. Meanwhile, they try to do all this fancy stuff. They try to add all this other content in, and it's like,
you don't like the same 10 NBA talking points day after day? You really don't?
I don't, and I also don't like, now that I've seen it. Brandon, have you seen what they've been doing with the NHL games?
I've not, but I know that they got like games on ESPN for this season, or when the season started back in October.
Yeah, right? It's great, but like in these playoffs particularly, they keep changing the camera angle in the middle of the game.
For hockey.
For hockey. You know, it's a very
a bit strange.
Standard. Honestly, I think baseball is the only one you can't use the same camera for the whole thing. Like, you could get by with every single other sport with only one camera going.
Yeah.
And yet they decide to go above and beyond, so to say, but no one likes it. It's unnecessary. We just want to see the play. We want to see the players. We want to talk about it. We don't need all the extra stuff.
Well, the next start that we wanted to bring up, we're going to go to the NL Central, where the Cardinals grind out a 1-0 win over the Royals yesterday. Their one run comes on a Paul Goldschmidt homer in the first inning. But the real story was the two starters in this game. Steven Matz for the Cardinals, 6 innings, 4 hits, no earned runs. He gets the win. Looked really good, and a guy that LJ and I certainly, I won't say that we've always been high on him, but a guy that we would like to see be good. And then how about our guy, Zach Greinke, off to a great start this year, just gets no run support. 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run from him, and of course the 1 earned run's on that home run, so really only one mistake the entire day. Nice to see both starters, though, do good.
Yeah, I will say, I think Steven Matz's performance was significantly better than Greinke's, but both very good starts. Because, Brandon, you're also forgetting about the other story. The real story out of this game was the fact that this stat line for Zach Greinke, instead of being 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned, 1 strikeout, 1 home run, should be 6 innings, 4 hits, 2 earned, 1 strikeout, 2 home runs. Because Michael Taylor had an insane home run robbery early in this game. Really, again, literally flat out saved the run there. You know, if it was probably anyone else, or there's very few other guys who could have pulled that off in the league, all of a sudden you're talking about a almost identical stat line with less strikeouts and more earned runs. But overall, again, that's two mistakes. You're not going to complain too much with that.
No, certainly not. And you're absolutely right about Michael A. Taylor. I remember when he signed in 2021 with the Royals, I thought that was a pretty underrated pickup. I mean, if he can hit whatsoever, it would have been a very solid contribution. The guy's got speed. He's a great defensive center fielder. You know, you look at stats like, at least for this year, his outfielder jump. So how quick is his reaction to the ball off the bat? He's in the top 15 percentile in the league. And when you're talking about elite, a defense coming out of center field, you know, there's the few guys that automatically come to mind, your Byron Buxtons, your Kevin Kiermaiers, your Jackie Bradleys, but he's not far behind
them. No, and again, it's very similar to Kiermaier and Bradley in the regard of the only thing holding him back is the offense. Like, if he can play to a level where you can justify him being out on the field each day, then he's going to bring you a lot of value.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, he's off to a rough start hitting, but certainly something that we'll talk about over the next few days when we have time. But the fact that like the league average, or that a 100 OPS right now is like a 700, or a 100 OPS plus is like a 700 OPS, offense is still dramatically down across the league. And we're not going to go too deep into this, but I feel like at some point, the faster games, you know, the games being played faster, it's good for the game when the games are still entertaining. I mean, I texted LJ. There was a play by Ronald Acuna yesterday where smokes a ball to center field. And in any of the last 3 seasons, maybe even 4 seasons, this is a home run. It has a 1,000 expected batting average. So every single ball in the StatCast era that had been hit with this exit velocity and this launch angle, of course, it doesn't take into account wind, spin on the ball, ballpark to an extent, like none of that. Every single batted ball with those stats had been a hit up until that point when it just kind of dies at the warning track, right into Brandon Nimmo's glove. It's just interesting to me. I mean, the balls are clearly dead. You see players and other people talking about it. You have to wonder why they would make the ball so much worse, or if it goes back to our theory of last year where they just don't have control over the ball and they don't, and then the league has no idea what they're doing with it.
I genuinely think at this point the only answer is that they don't know how to fix the ball. And like that it happens, I guess. I mean, you've kind of just played with it too much to the point where now you can't figure out how to get it back to doing exactly what it was originally supposed to do. Either way, you're just going to keep making it worse. The question is, which worse do we want?
Right.
Because at the end of the day, the majority of actually good players are still good with this
Yeah.
clearly dead ball. People just keep saying juice the ball back up because it's more fun and more offense. But at the same time, that would be so disappointing from the league standpoint, because first off, it's kind of like selling out. And second, I don't want to see the guys who relied on that for their power. I mean, not to call, I'm going to call out guys on both sides, Alex Verdugo, DJ LeMahieu. These guys are clear contact hitters, and that's fine for the league. You can make a great career out of yourself like that. But when a lot of your power comes from the juiced ball, then you don't deserve to have that power. And I don't entirely want to see that. Like, you need to play to your own game. And if guys are going to play to a juiced ball in order to be successful, I'm not as here for that. The other thing I think is, I've been calling this for this for a while, but we really need a correction of the sport back towards contact hitting. And this in part kind of does that, because if you can't fix the ball and you don't want to rejuice the ball, because people go nuts if you did, then all of a sudden you're going to see guys say, all right, it doesn't matter what we do, we're not going to be able to hit it out of the park that much. So let's just focus on actually getting the bat on the ball. And odds are something good might happen. Like, if you can't do this picture perfect, we're gonna try to hit a home run every time, and it's gonna work every time we do everything right, then you gotta just be more focused on the other parts of the game, and we need more of that right now.
Yeah, and to go back on my point, I just found this actually very weird looking stat line here. So Josh Donaldson, and I watch every Yankees game. I've watched at least one inning of every single game that we played this year. Most games, almost every pitch. He has not been productive whatsoever at the plate. Most fans know that it's not been what we're used to seeing. LJ, he has a 696 OPS and has a 116 weighted runs created plus. I mean, that's insane. A 696 OPS in previous seasons, you're going to be sitting around the 90 range for weighted runs created plus. And you're telling me that's with a 116 weighted runs created plus, that's 16% better than the league average hitter. It just leaves a bad taste in my mouth. And sure, you're absolutely right. The good players are still good, and we might see some guys try to change their approach a little bit, but it's just, I don't even know what the word is. It's just very strange to me.
It's a hard settlement, but it's a settlement that honestly, 2 years down the road, we're going to forget we were complaining about this.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to be so used to the way the game is played at that point that it's not going to be a real factor.
Well, I think the one other starting performance that we wanted to talk about from yesterday was Jake Odorizzi of the Astros. You know, there was a lot of talk with how bad his start was this year, how bad his start was last year, and you know, should the Astros switch or and then the Astros do switch to that six-man rotation. Well, Oda Rizzi kind of shuts up everybody yesterday, at least for a few days, where the Astros shut out the Mariners. They now have the same record at 12-11, and Oda Rizzi goes 6 2/3 innings with 4 hits, no earned runs, gets the win, and just looked really good. I watched some of the highlights. He was inducing a lot of soft contact. He's never been a real high strikeout guy, and just a really solid outing from him. I mean, even the bad pitchers, and I'm not saying that Oda Rizzi's bad because I still think that he has some sort of value. But I remember I heard this quote on the Yankees broadcast from a David Cone, and he said, "You know, if you have 30 starts a year, there's going to be 5 starts where you feel like you can locate every pitch perfectly, you have the best stuff, and you really can't get hit. You're going to have 5 starts where you have almost no control and you're really struggling. And then the other 20 starts is what makes a good pitcher good and a bad pitcher bad." Was this one of the 5 good starts from Jake Odorizzi this year, or one of those 5 starts? Maybe, but I still think we can't completely count him out. We know what the Astros do with these pitchers. We've seen a lot of pitchers make dramatic improvements. And in all honesty, you look at what Jake Odorizzi did last year, 102 ERA plus. I mean, he was above league average. Just slightly last year. I still think he has some of value here.
Yeah, overall, I think again, so far the six-man rotation has been a success
Yeah.
because the whole point of this, I don't think, was necessarily to replace one of the guys yet. It was to get everyone who deserves starts, and to also put some pressure on the guys that weren't performing. And there still are guys on this team that they need to show more to be able to stay. At the end of the day, I think you look at this group in, you look at them in, say, mid-June, definitely start of July, and you say, okay, who is the worst member of our rotation? And that's the guy who goes to the bullpen, regardless of who it is, regardless of how much experience out of the bullpen you have. That's the kind of mentality I think they have to go with right now.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that line of thinking. And pretty, you know, I can't wait to see how this six-man rotation ends up playing out. You know, how long do you stick with the six-man rotation? At what point do you switch back to that five-man rotation? I know that a Dusty Baker is a real smart manager and certainly knows what he's doing. So yeah, can't wait to see kind of how that plays out there.
Absolutely. Brandon, how much time are we looking at? What are we looking at?
We have a little time if we wanted to talk about Joe Adell getting sent down by the Angels. Gets optioned to AAA Salt Lake. This is a guy who, don't think it's wrong to say, he's been considered one of the sport's what most talented younger players for a while. According to this
A
article,
very, very long time, actually, but to be
yeah, I
fair.
mean, according to this article, he's been one of the top two prospects in the Angels system every year between 2018 and 2021 when he was no longer considered a prospect. You know, it's weird because in the few years or in the, you know, in the few seasons that we've seen Joe Adell play with the Angels, it's just, you know, very worrisome when you look at the strikeout and walk numbers. And it doesn't
Terrible.
help, and it doesn't help that he's 4 outs below average when it comes to outs above average, which is second worst among all outfielders in the league. Hopefully, you know, he can. When he's in AAA here, he can get everything figured out on both offense and defense, you know, work out those kinks. He's still a very young player. We can't forget that. And by the next time he gets called up, let's hope that this is a permanent stay for him in the majors.
I'm sorry. I'm out on this guy.
LJ's out on Joe Adell.
Look, I've just again, I think we've got a situation where, like, you're right. Enough is enough. We've been saying he's one of the best young players in the game for how long now, and yet we haven't seen the results. Frankly, I see and I respect the talent because you look at throughout his minor league numbers, you look at even his major league numbers, it's not great, but there's some solid pieces that kind of show you that there are flashes of this natural power bat that everyone keeps talking about and says is there. But you're right, the walkout to strike numbers, this is not, it's almost looks like a conscious choice. You're talking about a guy who
Javi
throughout
Baez
his,
like.
honestly, but like not e worse, right? You're talking about a guy who is a triple A, 2019 in triple A, struck out 32% of the time. He has never, except in his first season of rookie ball in 2017, he has never had a strikeout rate below 20. He has only had two segments of no greater than 43 games, 43 games and 25 games in his career, where he's had a walk rate over 10. This is clear lack of plate discipline that is hindering both his contact ability and his power ability, which is really what you're looking for out of this guy, what you've been hoping to see. And if you're going to be that undisciplined at the plate, you can't be in the majors, especially if you're that undisciplined throughout your entire minor league career. Like, there's no spot here that indicates, all right, maybe he has developed this. And if you're the Angels, how have you not put your foot down on this stuff yet? You had a lot of opportunities. You brought him through the ranks quickly, sure, but there was plenty of times where this guy's 23 years old. He's already been up to the majors enough that he isn't called a prospect anymore. If I'm the Angels, at some point here, I had to say, I'm putting my foot down. You might not even get on the field in double A until you start working on this plate discipline, until we see actual concrete changes to the way you're going about the game. Like this, they had to do something other than kind of coddle this guy and just say, oh, the numbers, the power is so great that it all evens out fine. So we're just gonna, we're gonna let it slide. We'll kick that can down the road, is basically what they've done with him his entire career and kept him from actually developing the most important skill in the offensive game.
Yeah, and it also doesn't help that Taylor Ward has just been on fire to start the year.
Ridiculous.
LJ, he's after he had a 1-for-4 game yesterday. I think he was one of the guys that had a hit off of a Dylan Cease. He might have been the only hit off of Dylan Cease. Batting average at 390, OPS at 1.23. Now we're talking about a guy, and we talked about him a little bit a few episodes ago, but that could really make himself a full-time player here for the Angels, which he hasn't had the opportunity to do because they've been waiting for these guys like Joe Adell and Brandon Marsh, who supposedly have so much talent. LJ, Brandon Marsh, we didn't even talk about him. He just finished off an 0-for-13 series against the White Sox. And Joe Adell and Brandon Marsh are the two outfielders that we all thought were going to be staples in this LA lineup for years to come alongside Mike Trout.
Yeah, I mean, looking at this, looking at his statistically, this could easily be Taylor Ward's breakout year, not just him kind of being there and getting a hot run, because this isn't somebody who sucked ever. I mean, you're talking about a league average guy in really 300 plate appearances for his career over the last couple of years, over the last 2 years. Like the only legitimate time that he has gotten out there, he has been an average guy at worst. Now all of a sudden you're seeing him at his best. You're seeing him going into his athletic prime. I think, this is the start of the breakout for him, and it's much better to have him getting as much playing time as humanly possible than to keep kind of wasting your time with a guy like Joe Adell.
And Taylor Ward now qualifies for the league leaderboards, leading the league in batting average, on-base percentage, slugging percentage, OPS, and OPS plus.
Brandon, you know what that means? That's going to cause some trouble. Mike
How
Trout is
about
now set to be on a 3-year drought of not leading the league in two categories.
Oh my God. Oh,
We're in shambles.
we are in shambles. The Angels, though, somehow through all of this, through all the bad production that they've had, and honestly, Brandon Marsh hasn't been bad, but just a really rough series for him. But of course, we just touched on Joe Adell. Guy like Jared Walsh, we're still expecting to pick it up a little here, but there's still a lot left in this Angels team. I'm still pretty high on them as of right now. And let's hope that they can turn it around, and especially a Joe Adell, a guy that I don't want to see be bad. I never want to see a player be bad, but when you're such a highly touted prospect and you're just waiting for them to be good and they just haven't put it together, it just gives you a bad feeling. I don't know.
You know, there's only one prospect that I'd ever want to see be bad, and it's not Joe Adell. I mean,
Jason
I just,
Dominguez.
yes.
Poor
But
kid.
I
This poor
just,
kid, LJ.
oh, I can't wait till he comes up. It's open season. I just can't keep making excuses for this guy getting better when he's shown me nothing that I should believe in him.
Absolutely. Well, believe that is going to do it for today's show. Thank you guys for listening. Be sure to check us out Instagram, Twitter, TikTok on MLB. At MLB Daily Pod. Also, little self plug, I will be going on what can I think of Effin Sports tonight with Parker Ainsworth to talk about the Kentucky Derby, which will be happening on Saturday. Of course, LJ and I are from Saratoga, like pretty much the horse racing capital of the world. Been a lifelong horse racing fan. My family's owned and trained horses for like 30 something years. So, very excited to hop on there tonight, talk some Kentucky Derby betting odds, and just overall what to look forward to Saturday with the Kentucky Derby. So, be sure to check that out. I'll be sure to link it on my Twitter. And until tomorrow, we'll see ya. Have a good one.
See you manana.